One, two, three, four.
Hello, and welcome to episode 30 of the Behind the Curtain Ministry podcast. Today I am interviewing Pastor Brian Laritz. He is the lead pastor from Abundant Life Christian Fellowship in Mountain View, California. Brian is a national leader when it comes to multi-ethnic churches, helping churches become multi-ethnic. He has an awesome book called Right Color, Wrong Culture, which I highly recommend if you are in a setting that is trying to become multi-ethnic. It is really excellent. His most recent book, which we'll talk about a little bit today, is called Saving the Saved, How Jesus Saves Us from Try-Harder Christianity into Performance-Free Love. You can find Brian online at brianlaritz.tumblr.com, and he's also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I will post all of those links, as well as links to several books and resources that Brian mentions in the interview. I will post them at my blog, which is at acrossroads.net. Also, if you are familiar with Brian before this interview, or if you're listening to the interview and you're saying, I want to learn more about this multi-ethnic church stuff, I'd also encourage you to check out a podcast that I do with a couple friends of mine. One of them I've interviewed on the podcast before, Pastor Tyler St. Clair. He was interviewed on the Behind the Curtain podcast in episode 17, if you want to check it out. He talks about being raised in Detroit and being a black church planter in Detroit, in the inner city, trying to do support raising as a black church planter. It's a really great interview. That was episode 17 of this podcast, but Tyler and I and Kyle Lake, who is the youth director at my church, we started doing a few months ago a new podcast called Chopping It Up, a podcast about race, race, and race. And we have a good time. We make fun of each other and joke, but we also talk about very serious issues about race that involve the church, that involve our culture. And so I just encourage you to check that one out as well as it relates to the interview today with Pastor Brian. You can find Chopping It Up the same place you can find the Behind the Curtain, which is at acrossroads.net or also on Podbean or iTunes. Pastor Brian and I recorded this interview over the phone. I got to tell you, this guy is super sharp, super helpful when it comes to ministry leadership in general, as well as multiracial church stuff. I encourage you to check out acrossroads.net, where you will find all of the links. Pastor Brian talks about some excellent stuff that I know I'm going to be diving into. You are sure to enjoy this conversation. All right, Pastor Brian. Well, I want to begin the interview by saying, first of all, I've been a pastor of the church I planted for 11 years. And so I can say this with a little bit of relatability, but your dad was a pastor and you saw the ups and downs of ministry. In fact, this is a little quote from your recent book, Saving the Saved. You saw the suffocating pain of ministry, and yet you still followed that path into pastoral ministry. That's a question most people probably wouldn't ask in this way, but why would you follow the path of pastoral ministry, seeing the ups and downs that you saw growing up?
Well, a little bit of kind of variance there. So I technically didn't follow my dad's path into pastoral ministry. He didn't start pastoring until 2005.
Oh, okay.
And, I started pastoring in 1995.
Ah, he followed your path.
Well, but where, of course, where it's similar is, you know, preaching. So, you know, Dad was always preaching, but his ministry when I was growing up in his house was itinerant. So he would be what some would call in ages past an evangelist, and
gotcha.
He'd go to various venues and preach the gospel, but then he'd leave, hop on a plane, come home, which is a lot different from pastoral ministry. But in general, I mean, there are a lot of, no matter what your position may be in ministry, if you're itinerant, if you're pastor, if you're senior pastor, if you're associate pastor, there are a lot of commonalities, as we know. So, but yeah, just wanted to point that out. There's a little bit of a difference there.
Sure. Well, what are the hardest things in ministry for you? Now, I mean, you don't need to share details, but what are some of the harder things in ministry, and how do you deal with those just as a man, you know, as a man of God, as a follower of Christ? Ministry is not always roses and daisies and, you know, what it might look like on the surface.
Yeah, so I don't, there are some very hard things about ministry, and I think that's a great question, and I definitely want to unpack some of those things, but I don't want to paint a rainy day picture of ministry,
kind of
overcast, bleak. You know, I think some people, the way they talk about ministry, I'm like, and you're still doing it,
right?
So it's I think with any calling, sure, there are parts of the calling that you just don't necessarily enjoy, but if God's called you to do something, He's given you what you need to walk in it. So there's a sense in which there's a joyful burden to it. And but I'd say one of the tough parts about ministry, especially pastoral ministry, is you are both ministering to people and many times you're in relationship to some degree with those people.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be a really squirrely thing, you know. Especially, you know, I've seen pastors who've been removed from their churches, and the thing that they grieve the most is it's not just that they've left a job, but they've left people they've formed attachments with.
Yeah.
And you go through that once, for sure, multiple times, it's easy to put up defenses, and you can put a sense of distance between yourself and the people you've been called to walk with and minister to, and thus you create this scenario where ministry can be very lonely. So you got to have a high degree of trust. You know, what does it look like to walk in relationship with your bosses who are elders?
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
What does it look like to preach a perfect standard, which is the Word of God, and yet just as a fallen, fallible human being, the very ones you've been preaching that perfect standard to, they see your imperfections.
Yeah.
And, I mean, all of this is just, it's very tough, especially within the context of a local church. So it can be challenging. And the route a lot of guys go is they just go, you know what, I'm not going to have people get too close to me. So
Right. Maybe
they establish a brand. And that always ends badly for people. So,
some of these questions I ask just from personal need, you know, guidance and those sorts of things. And so, if you're preaching a sermon and you're talking about, and this has happened at our church over the years as we've become multi-ethnic from a homogenous church, and we start talking about issues surrounding race or things going on in our culture. What's it like to be black in America? And if one part of the body suffers, we all suffer. And then my friends who I have these relationships with, and this isn't unique to me, you know, as a pastor, whether it's that topic or some other topic that someone gets offended by, I certainly have people leave the church over, you know, other reasons. But how do you handle that when friends of yours, people you've had these relationships with, you've been in community with, they're leaving the church, but it's for reasons not that I don't want to say like you and I are prophets, you know, like Isaiah was or Jeremiah was, but we're trying our best to preach the word. You know, we're saying we're really believing that this is the word, and people seem like they're leaving because we're saying what God, you know, told us to say through the word. That hurts me still. You know, it hurts me when people leave, and then I kind of wonder, what am I supposed to do with that? I mean, do you have any thoughts or advice on that sort of thing?
Yeah, it's always hurtful when people leave, and I don't consider myself to be the most sentimental person or the most sensitive
mm-hmm.
person, you know. But as a pastor, it's hard to not take that kind of stuff personally. Now, to answer your question, because you tied it into a very combustible issue by grace. You know, Paul exhorts Timothy. He tells Timothy, look, you need to teach with all patience. And there's a great African-American preacher, A. Lewis Patterson, who said there's three qualities that every pastor must have: patience with people, patience with people, patience with people. And, you know, it's tough. And in my younger days as a pastor and preacher, I would get so passionate about something, coupled with the idealism that usually comes when you're in your 20s and early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just be like, here's the program, get with the program.
Yeah.
And what you just need to understand is, you know, Paul tells the Colossians that his goal is to present everyone mature in Christ. So you assume a level of immaturity. You've got to assume that. And maturity doesn't happen overnight. So you need patience. So instead of stepping up to the plate and you're dealing with a hot topic like race going, I'm swinging for the fences, you got to have the long view. And I think there's a couple ways you can go about it. I actually think that preaching is just a small part of it, but because of the dynamics of communication and preaching, where it is this monologue, this one-way street of communication, I think when you talk about these issues, you should also create venues and environments that are conducive to give and take and two-way communication and discussion, like town halls, small group settings, so on and so forth. But, hey, this issue of race, 400 years in the making, it's not going to end with one sermon. So you got to go, hey, I just got to have a long view here. And then there are people, I don't care how nice you say it and how loving you say it, the fact that you said it, they're not coming back. Okay. That's fine. So.
That's really helpful. That's very helpful. I'm 33 and I fall into that camp. And so that's very helpful. I appreciate that. I got a question that kind of ties in the first two things I asked you about, and it has to do with John Perkins, who I know has been a big influence and role model in your life. He's one of my faith heroes. You talked about in Saving the Saved about how there's a problem with those of us who build bridges between ethnicities, as we often get stepped on. And then you talked about how strong John Perkins is and has been, you know, throughout his entire ministry. From what you've observed from Dr. Perkins, what is it that makes him so strong and be able to do what he does so well?
Well, if there's one word that really I just think sums up Dr. Perkins, it's really the word love. I mean, he is, you know, by the way, I think it's good that you and the listeners pick up his forthcoming, I don't think he's calling it an autobiography, it's his memoirs.
Oh, okay.
And that's coming out in 2017.
Okay.
And I was privileged to get an advanced copy of it, and it's
awesome.
Amazing. It's really amazing.
Awesome.
But he made the decision in a well-known story when he had been tortured in prison in his younger years. He made a decision that he was not going to wallow in unforgiveness and bitterness, and that he was going to let love have the final say over his life. And that decision makes him one of the most remarkable, gracious, patient, loving, forgiving people I know.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's just a sweetness to the old guy, just a sweetness. That really, I go, man, I haven't been through a tenth of what he's gone through, and I want to have his love. So that to me, that's what really sums him up and differentiates him from others.
Mm. I'm sure this is a question that you get asked all the time. I can only imagine how often you get asked this. This was asked to me for the first time by a fellow. He's not a pastor, but a worship leader at a church, a homogenous white church, and he knows that our church has been transitioning over the years to being multi-ethnic, and he asked me, kind of in light of a lot of the headline catching racial conflict issues, you know, how do we make our church diverse? And I think you probably get that question asked all the time. His thought behind it was sort of like it was an overnight solution to it, and he was almost asking it in a church growth sort of way, sort of like what tricks do we do to get to be multi-ethnic? You know, when you get asked that question, not necessarily, I mean, I would, you know, love to hear some of the things you would say, I guess, about how to do that, but that's not really what I'm asking is, how do you handle that question when someone, let's say I call you up and say, Pastor Brian, man, I got this homogenous white church, and how do we become diverse? You know, I just, like, tell me how to do it. And there's just, like, this urgency to it, like, we can do this all overnight. What would you advise the stance should be if someone's really desiring this sort of thing?
Well, it's far easier to do it. Not that it's easy, but it's easier to do it if you're starting from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And from day one, that's a part of the DNA.
Yeah.
If you're trying to transition that church in that direction, it's going to be really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Worthwhile for sure. So there's a couple of things. Number one, you got to ask yourself, is the community I'm in conducive to the kind of multi-ethnicity that I'm looking for? And the answer typically is yes. So some of the latest data points say that the average community that the church is in is 10 times more diverse than the church.
Mm-hmm.
And the data also says that the average schools that are in that community that the church is in is 20 times more diverse than the church. So all that is just painting a big picture, surprise, surprise, that the church is lagging behind significantly. So chances are, if you're living here, there's a greater if you're listening here, I should say, there's a greater degree of diversity outside your church than what's happening inside your church. That's a basic principle. It's not true every time, but unfortunately, it's true most of the time. The next thing I would say is, if that's the case, so, you know, obviously, if I'm in Fargo, North Dakota, I probably not going to be diverse. But by and large, you have an opportunity for diversity. So the next step I got to say as a leader is are my relationships diverse? Because Leadership 101 says I can't take people to a place I'm not journeying towards myself. And so I've got to model that. I've got to show the people that this is a core value. I'm not just trying to get into them, but it's a core value that's being driven in my own life. And this is Paul, 1 Corinthians chapter 9, where Paul says, hey, if you look at my friendships, to the Jew I became a Jew. I've got Jewish friends. To those outside the law, those are Gentile friends. He says, I got Jewish friends. I got Gentile friends. I've got all sorts of friends. If you read the end of his letters, in many of those letters, he's giving shout-outs to people and just analyze the names and their multi-ethnic names. So at the end of the day, the leader has to say, is this genuinely a value of mine? Okay, so now that I've got those two boxes checked, the community, it's a value of mine, then I can do some things. So I can start preaching about it. At the end of the day, we're louder on the gospel than we are on the sociological implications of the gospel.
Yeah.
But still, I got to talk about it. Music is a big deal. You know, and if you're one of the major questions I get all the time is, well, what about training worship leaders who have skill sets to help create multi-ethnic environments? Well, there's a great worship leader conference that's happening. If you go to Mount Hermon's website, you can just type in worship leader conference. I think it's called Make Us One. That is a great conference that's coming up next year that'll train worship leaders and how to create multi-ethnic environments through worship leading. So music is key. Preaching is key. Now your staffing has got to be key. You ask yourself, does my leadership match the demographic I'm going after? So this is both your elder board, if that's how you roll, deacons, whatever your leaders may be, and also paid staff, all that. So when people visit a church, one of the questions they're asking is, whose space is this?
Mm-hmm.
if I'm a minority, I'm asking, is this a welcoming space for this? And one of the ways they'll answer that question, shoot, they can answer before they come to your church. They can just kind of test drive you on your website.
Yeah.
They can figure those things out. But those are significant things that create an environment that is conducive to multi-ethnicity growing.
What is some of the cost that someone's going to, I don't mean financial, but the, you know, as you go into this and you have to decide, let's say it's a church that's existing. Because I felt the same thing about church plants. Even our church, we were only 3 years in when we made the transition, and it was too late, you know, with the DNA was embedded of homogeneity, and we had to work against that. I love the idea of planting from scratch. I love the idea of planting from scratch with a white pastor and a black pastor and going from there. But if you have a homogenous church that wants to do these things, what is some of the cost that some of the that they're going to endure before they start seeing some of the amazing fruit, you know, that comes from this?
Well, if you're transitioning a pre-existing church that's homogenous and you're trying to take it into multi-ethnicity, just be prepared for kind of a backdoor revival where you'll just get a bunch of people who go, hey, this isn't what I signed up for.
Right.
And they will cloak it in all kinds of different other reasons that mask the real reason. And the real reason is, I'm just not comfortable with this. This is not the church that I signed up to be a part of. So you got to have a thick skin. You'll constantly be getting complaints. You'll constantly be getting questions. You'll constantly be misunderstood. It's just part and parcel of it. You'll be misunderstood not just by people in the pew, but even maybe some of the new teammates that you'll bring on staff. And so what you have to do is you got to check a box that says, hey, I have blind spots on. Posture yourself as a learner and own what you need to own and admit what you need to admit. I just don't know it all here. I need help. Ask questions. Don't make statements. And I think it's a good principle in general, no matter what we're talking about. But if you're in ministry, the older you get, the prayer is, help me to have thicker skin yet a soft heart. The problem with a lot of people in ministry is they have thin skins and thick hearts. So you're going to take lumps, but how do you take lumps without getting cynical?
Yeah.
Again, Gilbreth in his brilliant book, Reconciliation Blues, says, hey, those of us in this kind of ministry, we're bridges, and bridges get stepped on. So how do we do it without getting cynical? That's key.
That's awesome. That's super helpful. I'll link to all these as well on the when I post this episode, the conference links and the different books you're mentioning, just so listeners know, they can find those there. Let me ask you kind of one in conclusion here. I'll switch gears a little bit to some of the content of Saving the Saved, your most recent book, which I just love because it's a topic that I struggle with. Your subtitle is How Jesus Saves Us from Try Harder Christianity into Performance-Free Love. And I planted a church. I'm on the other side of the author spectrum from you in that I'm an aspiring first-time author and still having to deal with some of the things you write about in Saving the Saved as far as nowadays just the metrics that are used for determining someone's value, you know, and we have the Twitter followers and all these sorts of things, and it can be a real struggle, especially with, you know, publishers' expectations. And I'm sure, you know, once you get a book published, then you're looking at how many does it sell and all these sorts of things. There's sort of a, this is probably too strong of a word, but I just know my own vulnerabilities and temptations in the area, you know, of ego and pride. Church planting and writing can almost be like a cesspool for these sins to grow in me and in my heart. And this is what I love about your book is it shows a path where we don't have to be owned, you know, by that performance-driven love. And I'm wondering, just before we end our conversation, if you could just talk about that as far as, you know, sometimes I'm tempted to leave, pastoring, or I'm tempted to stop attempting, to stop writing, stop blogging, you know, because I just don't want to deal with this pull anymore, this sort of sin, this temptation, and the things that our culture seems enamored with. What are your reflections as you look back, Pastor Brian, on, in a metric sense, what would be considered success? You know, success as you look back, and what has helped you keep your identity as a son of God, you know, in the process, and not get caught up in that. I guess what I'm asking, it's one thing for me that I sort of struggle with. I feel like a failure because I've not achieved these metrics. Maybe on the success side of it, how do you deal with that success in a way where you're not getting, you know, caught up in those sorts of things? Because I think there's some significant traps there that many in my shoes are getting caught in along the path.
Yeah, so I think it's important to just admit the obvious, and that is mm-hmm. this is a tension to be managed.
Yeah. Yeah,
and not a box to be checked. So I don't think any person will say, hey, I'm good with that, don't need people's approval, don't struggle with recognition or any of that stuff. I think it's a constant uphill battle to say, I am not the amount of followers I have on Twitter, I'm not how many copies of my book have sold. I am not the fact that I've written a book. I am not my latest sermon. I am not my weight. I mean, I just on and on and on we can go. And
yeah.
So I just think that's just a daily grind. I think practically speaking too, is I think what happens to you. So typically in your 20s and 30s, you're climbing what I call Mount Significance, and you're wanting to leave your mark, which is a good thing. It's a noble thing. It's really how God's wired you. I think the older you get, and especially when you've made some contributions, what happens to you is you're able to settle in into some things, and you're able to applaud and cheer on others in a healthy way. Hey, look, if come my 50s and 60s, when I'm moving kind of into the patriarch phase of my life, if I'm not holding court at the local diner with a long line of young guys trying to get breakfast with me, then I think I've really failed. You know, I'm supposed to be cheering on the next generation, and the way I'm able to do that is I have just settled into some things as it relates to my sense of self-worth and self-esteem. And it's impossible for me to cheer somebody else on if I don't have a good grip on who I am, who approves me, and how I've been wired. It's impossible to applaud someone genuinely and compete with them at the same time.
Yeah, that's good.
So a person who just hasn't slayed that significance monster, you're going to be in a perpetual state of competition.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a miserable place to be. So, you know, yeah, gosh. I mean, it's just, and then in the church world, you know, you get into size of church and things of that nature. And if you're not operating out of a sense of calling, you're just gonna be miserable. So those are some things that have helped me: cultivating a rich devotional life, on my knees before the Lord, having Him say to me, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I'm well pleased." Boom. Those are daily reminders, and then trying to authentically celebrate other people is really helpful for me in dealing with my own issues of status and significance and all that. Oh, one more thing too that I think is helpful.
Yeah.
I think taking a weekly Sabbath, and for me what a weekly Sabbath means, among other things, is there's a 24-hour period of time I don't touch social media.
Yeah.
And it's a great weekly reminder, again, that I'm not the amount of friends I have on Facebook, the likes I get on Instagram posts, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that. Yeah, that's awesome. Man, I feel like this has been I'm one of those people in the long line that wants breakfast at the diner. You know, you're not in your twilight years yet. You're not in your man, this is awesome. This really is awesome. This is some awesome wisdom. And thanks for being real with me, because I try to be real in my questions, because it's just kind of the struggles of where I'm at. And I want to be doing this when I'm 43 and 53 and 63, you know, and to get there. Man, this stuff is awesome, Pastor Brian. So I just thank you. Thanks for doing the podcast and for all that you're doing, man. I just really want to bless you.
Well, appreciate you, man.
One, two, three, four.
Well, this concludes episode 30 of the Behind the Curtain Ministry podcast. As I said in the intro, tons of great resources laid out by Pastor Brian. I will post all those on my blog where I post this episode at atticcrossroads.net. I know I have now added several new books to my reading list. I'm especially looking forward to reading that memoir by Dr. Perkins. Very excited about that. Looking forward to that conference as well for worship leaders. I am not a worship leader, but man, I would love to get some of our worship leaders at Crossroads out to that conference. So I'll post all those links along with ways you can connect with Pastor Brian. I encourage you to do that. As he said in the interview, he has that heart to sit for breakfast at a diner with younger ministry leaders like myself, and he's great at that. What a privilege it was for me to be able to have this conversation with him, and I hope it was a privilege for you to get to hear it and keep connecting with him. So we'll have all those links for you to be able to do that. Encourage you to follow the podcast at Podbean, as well as subscribe on iTunes. It's hard to believe that we are 30 episodes in, but it's pretty neat to look back at all the different guests that we've had on the podcast. Recently, Shane Claiborne, Noel Castellanos, president of the CCDA, Matthew Sorens from World Relief, talking about immigration, as well as just a whole bunch of pastors and ministry leaders about how to stay fresh in ministry, how to not lose your soul while doing ministry. Tons of great interviews with authors about how to navigate the publishing world without losing your soul. Some of those things we talked about today with Pastor Brian about, I love it, him saying, I am not my Twitter followers. I am not the amount of books I've sold. I am a son that's been adopted that God is well pleased with. And that is much easier said than done. As he said, it takes daily time with the Lord, soaking in those truths. And that is something I try to hit on in every single one of my interviews that I do. Especially like my two interviews with Ruth Haley Barton, who has been very instrumental for me in my journey of freedom in those areas. Recommend her book, Strengthening the Soul of Your Leadership, as well as Pastor Zach Eswine and his book, The Imperfect Pastor. I encourage you to check those out if that's an issue that resonated with you today. Thank you for listening, and I will see you next time at A Crossroads and Behind the Curtain. Bye.